Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Alarmy. Before we get started, we wanted to make sure you heard the big news. The Alarmist has joined Patreon. Patreon subscribers will get access to our content ad-free, as well as our Aftermath post-interview discussion and final verdict. We'll also be putting out additional bonus episodes and other fun stuff. Here's a preview of Guest Alarmist, where I step aside and let a guest walk us through a personal tragedy, and together the Alarmist crew figures out who's to blame. This month, Leah Poliott discusses the sisterhood of the traveling disaster.
But I do want to say, it's like, what always happens too is that, like, you have these, like, you know, destinations you want to go to, but then something always happens along the way. There's always magic involved.
Yeah, it's the magic.
What's such the bummer is that Leah and Sarah didn't get to kind of find those pockets of magic in their...
Well, did travels. You? We don't know. Was there a magical moment, even though all this chaos was going on, that you guys think about, like, with fond memories?
There were some ravioli that we had when we first got into France.
That's great.
And that is still magical in my heart.
Great.
It was the only place open before dinner. We got in. It was like 3 or 4 at a weird time. Nobody was at this restaurant. Best ravioli I've ever had in my entire life.
That's
I'm
great.
So happy for you.
Yeah.
Go to patreon.com/thealarmist and subscribe today. Now, on to our episode. Each week, we decide who's to blame for a historical tragedy. And each week, you tell us if we got it right. My name is Rebecca Delgado-Smith, and this is The Aftermath. The Aftermath. Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Aftermath. Today, we're speaking with guest expert Josh Woods. Josh is the author of Oh Monstrous World. He's also a professor of English and host of the podcast The Monster Professor. Let's hear what he has to say about werewolves and their origin. Hi, Josh. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Rebecca. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I mean, you have really committed to the study of monsters. What drew you to devoting so much time into researching werewolves?
Yeah, werewolves are probably the most popular favorite monster when I talk to people about their when we talk about monsters. And I always want to know, like, what's your personal favorite monster or what monster scared you most as a child? And werewolves are like 60-70% of the answers, interestingly. But I'm not only a werewolf obsessive. I'm monster inclusive, so I'm into all sorts of monsters. I mean, I guess I'm as much into like 80s slashers, you know, from 80s horror films as I am anything. But what people really want to know right now is, what's up with werewolves? So where did all that start? I don't know. It wasn't honestly until I finished my second book, and I was going around giving a series of lectures on monsters and literature, that I realized I've got a monster issue. Like, I had no idea my whole life. And then I look back all the way to when I was a little kid, and like, oh my God, I've always been obsessed with monsters, and I just didn't realize it. And so now I've just accepted that I'm a monster person.
Well, we need monster people as well, you know, otherwise who would be? So can you give us a physical rundown of a werewolf? What are its main characteristics?
Well, that's a really tough question, but because no one ever seems to agree, but I think the standard notion of a werewolf right now is, so it's a guy who has been bitten by a previous werewolf. Don't ask where that one came from. And then he's got under the light of a full moon, he transforms into some version of a wolf. Now it's either he's still humanoid and he's got hair all over him and sharp teeth and his face changes and he's stronger and faster and has none of the like ego, super ego control over his like animal instincts. Now, like the most animalistic versions of himself are taken over. So he's not full animal, but he's a beast man. And he runs through the fields or the towns at night, killing people at random. Although there was one movie that said that in their folklore, they said the werewolf, when he transforms, kills what he loves most. And that's a shame that that didn't carry on, because I think that's a great story hook there. But and so the way you stop a werewolf is you got to shoot him with a silver bullet.
Okay.
Now, the other one that's just as popular as that is the guy turns into an actual wolf and he runs around, and that would be a werewolf. And there are just as many like female lycanthropes in film, at least, as there are male. And so I guess I keep saying a guy, but if it's a woman, then she would be a weef wolf. Because werewolf means man wolf in Old English. So Old English would be weef wolf. And we have, you know, arguably the very first werewolf on film was a weef wolf, but that's a lost film anyway.
Well, I that was my follow-up question. Are they usually male? But it can happen to female. There are weef wolves.
Absolutely, yeah.
I'm saying.
And they're all over. And I mean, werewolves within, well, sorry if I spoiled that for anybody, but Werewolves Within, Trick or Treat, the Ginger Snaps movies, even some early 1940s movie like Cry of the Werewolf, I think it was. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful film where she turns into an actual wolf they have on screen. Or big dog, I don't think. But yeah, just as many women as men, so no one's safe.
Right. Good to know. How far back in history can we pinpoint the origin of the werewolf? When did these creatures start to pop up, and how are they depicted at first?
Yeah, that's... So it goes back as far as anything we have recorded from human beings, actually. Because if we want to look at it like that, like the werewolf I just described is essentially our understanding of a werewolf right now. And so I think we look back with those lenses on to find any other instance of a type of person who turned into some type of animal. And so if we're going to look for that, and especially any type of person who has turned into a wolf, then I guess the Epic of Gilgamesh, which is the very first story ever written by humans. I mean, that's like 6,000 years old. A guy gets cursed by a goddess, a shepherd, and she turns him into a wolf. They had a breakup back in the day, so she's rather vengeful. And she turns him into a wolf, so he eats his own sheep. And Herodotus... that would be 400s BC, he was writing more of these tribes of Europeans who would periodically go through these rituals and turn themselves into wolves. And so you have kind of two strains of werewolves. You have those who get involuntarily turned into a wolf, but by the curse of a god. And then you have tribes that put on, say, the skin of a wolf, or they put on a special belt and they transform themselves into wolves and they go on the hunt like voluntarily. But probably the most famous of the ancient stories would be King Lycaon, who angers Zeus by trying to trick him into becoming a cannibal. And he has a weird set of reasons for maybe trying to do that, although it still never explains why that's his revenge on Zeus. But it doesn't work. Zeus gets really mad. This is Greek mythology, by the way, but we really know about it from Romans. Ovid wrote about it in the Metamorphoses. That's the most famous version. So that'd be about 8 AD, something like that. And so he angers Zeus, and Zeus, as a punishment, turns him into a wolf and then floods the whole world to try to kill off everybody else.
Wow.
but King Lycaon, and that's where we get our word lycanthrope. It's from King Lycaon. But even then, there's some suggestion that the message, or like why a wolf? And it has something to do with like the gluttony or greed of tyrants. But now I think we look at wolves as a different kind of symbol, something more like, you know, the most vicious versions of ourselves coming through.
Now, tyranny. Werewolves, they seem to have been incorporated into fables that were told among farming communities. What was the purpose of these fables?
Yeah, you're right to bring up like the farming community of that rule, because you don't see many were alligators in London, right? Because you just don't have that kind of thing. And in fact, while there were still wolves in, say, the UK and the islands, you had werewolf stories. And once all the wolves were essentially hunted out of say England or Ireland, Scotland. Then they start discounting them. You know, even King James is saying, oh, it's just nonsense. Witches are real and demons are real, but werewolves are just nonsense, because they don't have to actually worry about wolves. But over in Germany or France, where you're out strolling late at night and you don't have some sort of weapon on you, you might get taken down by wolves. Then the werewolf stories probably didn't feel so much like fables to them, maybe a little bit of warning. It's a dangerous, scary world out there when you're like right, you know, in the dark, right at the edge of the Black Forest, and you're hearing, Rebecca, have you ever been out in the wilderness and have heard like coyotes or any wolves howling or anything?
It's terrifying. I don't spend a lot of time in the wilderness, I have to be honest.
Well, that's probably for the best, since you're alarmed about werewolves.
But here in Los Angeles, we do have coyotes that often come down from the mountain and stroll around our neighborhood. So it really is scary once you come upon in the middle of a night a coyote or some kind of wolf creature.
Yeah, you hear that sound that you know is not just a regular domesticated dog, and it sends shivers down your spine, and you suddenly turn into like all of your modern notions of, say, scientific materialism and skepticism, they all just vanish in an instant. And suddenly you're like, oh my, what kind of thing is that? And is it out to get me for no particular reason? And so, you know, of course, if you're going to tell stories to scare your children, which Germans love to do, or if you're going to tell stories to freak out your party goers, which the French love to do, then you're going to bring in the scariest things that you know nearby.
So I would assume that a lot of these stories became so prevalent because of this fear and paranoia about these creatures potentially coming into your community and harming not just you and your children but your animals, right? These were farmers, and so it must have been terrifying to reside near the wilderness back before there were, you know, before we understood science and before we understood just all of these animal patterns.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I think it's still terrifying, even if you do understand.
Right. Well, that's why I don't go there.
I mean, even science is no, science can't save you or help you, because even science can't say that werewolves aren't real. That would be, it would be a really unscientific thing to say that you know something doesn't exist. All you can say is we don't have any replicatable data and we have no model for incorporating it. And so it would be cold comfort to know that while your throat is being ripped out by a werewolf saying, well, this isn't very scientifically approved. Like, I don't think that would help me feel very good about it. And so I don't, these are scary things out there. Or if you're like, no, there are no werewolves, no way. These are just all the people who have been werewolves are crazy, violent people. Well, those are just as scary, right? I mean, what's the real difference between like, these say the Scandinavian warriors that would get out on the battlefield and they would become werewolves. We have historical accounts of these guys putting on either a belt or the skin of a wolf and becoming either a bear is more popular, the berserkers, but we also had the wolfmen or the wolf warriors. They would turn into these wolves out there and kill people. Maybe they were just really vicious warriors killing people, but that's still just as scary, I would say.
Almost even scarier. Now, we discovered in our research that historically there seems to be a link between male sexual deviants and serial killers attributing their crimes to being werewolves, especially in the 16th and 17th centuries. What were some of these most notable cases?
Oh, man, the worst of them all, and so therefore everybody's favorite who has the dark bent to him, I think, has got to be Peter Stumpf. It looks like a stump, at least to my eyes, but I'll only move over to the correct foreign pronunciation if it's more fun to say. It's more fun to say. I'm told it's Peter Stumpf. And this guy was just, he like ate 14 kids. And one of them was his own son that he ate his brains out of the skull of his own son. He only admitted to being a werewolf after or during torture. Like, I think at that point they did every torture on him until he was finally dead that they could think of. And so they started out, I think, by drawing him in a rack. And only then did he start saying that he would turn into a wolf. He actually had a special belt at home that the devil gave him to turn him into a wolf. And he would put that on and they would go out. There were several, he would go and hunt down pregnant women, and he would eat the fetuses out of them.
Oh my God.
At that time he had a mistress and a daughter, which he hadn't killed yet, but he had been raping both of them. Oh. And so on the trial, they tortured and executed those two for even being associated with him. But they did everything they could think of. They skinned him, they alive, they pulled his guts out, they burned him alive until they finally got rid of him. And they also went, during the trial, they went back to his house to see if they could find that belt, but they said they never found it. It makes you wonder, why did they want it?
Don't get that anywhere near me. I can't believe that just being connected to a werewolf was enough to get you killed.
Yeah, I don't know why they felt like they had to torture those two poor women, but they just wanted to wipe that clean. And this all happened, the actual execution happened on Halloween Day. And so this was in Germany in the 1580s. Am I right about that? Yeah, 1589, that's what it was. And so that's probably got to be the most infamous. But there are plenty of others. Not my favorite, but I think the most vicious. And so what was this guy? Because he had done all these terrible cannibalistic murders and all these horrible things. Like, was he just a psychopath, or was he a psychopath that actually was a werewolf? Like, what's the difference other than the way he looks? Like, these are things that a horrifying person or a werewolf would do. And so in that way, like, are werewolves real? Like, we know that there are people who let loose their animal sides and do things just as horrible as actual werewolves do. So I don't see the difference.
So you're saying they're still amongst us?
I'm afraid it might be. Or if we don't have any werewolves anymore, maybe all the werewolf hunters wiped them out for us. So our brave forefathers took them out. We don't have to worry about them anymore. But yeah, there were a lot of werewolf trials. In some places, they were just as popular, if not more, than witch trials. Although there wasn't really that big of a distinction between witch and werewolf for a lot of people.
I'm curious what the connection between witches and werewolves at the time was.
Yeah, that for Christians dealing with werewolves, then werewolves were demonic or witch related, and so they're very often the products of, say, like witch-like magic turning someone into a wolf, or pacts with the devil to turn oneself into a wolf. For the pagans, it was a little bit more of like a tribal ceremony. So I guess what a lot of people might think of and say, I don't know, say more of a shamanistic style of transformation. But for European pagans, it was like putting on putting on the animal, so you're outwardly embodying your inner animal side. Mm. And so there would be a lot of like people who would go and spend 1 year out of every nine or every seven or 1 month out of every nine being a wolf or something like that. But yeah, but for the Christians, it was the witch and the werewolf, or a witch turning herself into animals or turning other people into animals. It was all mixed up in one thing. We like having our monsters in separate categories. Yeah. Now, but you know, the archaic worldview was that if you're either a normal person under the grace of God, or you're all these other things, and we don't really care as much as we need to kill you.
So, wow. Yeah. Now, when did vampires and werewolves start to go hand in hand, and what is their relationship like?
Hundreds of years ago, these things were kind of one and the same, but now we think of them as separate. And so I guess in two different ways, like there was an old medieval notion. What a vampire even is actually a really modern thing that that really didn't come along. We don't really get it until, say, Bram Stoker's Dracula comes out. But before that, it's the kind of a recent folktale from southeastern Europe. I'm going to go off track of talking about vampires, but our notions of what a vampire is now is pretty recent. But there, if you look back at what is at the heart of a vampire, it's this body that rises from the grave to stalk the living at night. Well, then that kind of thing stretches as far back as werewolves as well. But the two weren't all that different. Like for medievals, if you killed a werewolf, unless you did all the proper kinds of things to keep it from rising, once you killed some guy who was a werewolf, he would rise from the grave, and that's how you get vampires. And so he would rise as a vampire and stalk the world. And so the two were all mixed up until we get like Bram Stoker's Dracula, and then until we get like the Universal monster movies, and then they become separate things. And so I think they don't end up meeting again until, what is it, the House of Frankenstein? I think it was House of Frankenstein, the Universal movie, where you get a werewolf and a vampire that are separate from each other meeting.
Wow. Yeah. Now, we were discussing on our episode, or really we were struck by how in popular culture, when it comes to vampires and werewolves, vampires seem to be seen as the sexier monster. Why is that?
Is that what you think? Are you more of a vampire person?
Honestly, but I just there's something you know, you don't see a ton, and maybe I'm just not well versed in the werewolf cinema, but you seem to see more of like vampires. Is it the sucking of the blood? Is it the, you know, there's more of a connection to women now in film. But we were just curious. Maybe we're totally wrong. Maybe werewolves are just as sexy as vampires.
Well, I mean, it would make sense, I guess, since at the heart of the vampire story, it's about seduction at some point, right?
Exactly.
Like the vampire, you have to invite the vampire in. And so you're either hypnotized and you do it, or you do it on purpose. Like you want the vampire in your room at night. And then it's a very sensual thing, like sucking on your neck and drawing forth the blood and all that stuff. And often in your bed at night kind of thing. And so maybe that's just inherently sexier than being chased through the woods while you're screaming and running through the briars.
Yeah, that's definitely
but
hot.
Some people are into that too. So if you like being more pursued and hunted than seduced, then maybe werewolves are your thing.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Now, is it possible that some uncommon, unexplainable medical condition of the time led to all of these people being misdiagnosed as having some kind of werewolf ailment? If so, what were some of these ailments, and does that explain history's confusion?
Yeah, I think the short answer is no way. None of these things even come close. But they tried, right? There are a lot of modern folks who have tried doing that kind of thing. Like we have now what we call medical or clinical lycanthropy, which are essentially, it's just categorized as a delusion that someone thinks, you know, I'm a wolf and I have to run around on all fours and try to chew other people's necks off. And so we have, I think the National Library of Medicine said something like 43 cases in recorded history of people being diagnosed as this kind of thing. But and then there are various diseases, like the one where hair grows on your face. There was another doctor in the late 60s, early 70s, who thought that there was this this buildup of toxins in your body gives you symptoms that match up with werewolf folklore. And, you know, I went back and read his paper, and he's pretty good on werewolf folklore, but nothing matches up to those symptoms. And so, and, you know, those folks with that disease where you have hair on your face, I don't know of any of them being more violent. I would say even less so than average people. So I don't think anything comes close to scientifically explaining it. Other than if you're going to go something like cases like Peter Stumpf, where you've got psychopaths who the people want to know, you know, and so he doesn't, of course, say this kind of stuff until he's under torture. People, I think, want to have an answer. Like, why are you so evil? Mm-hmm. And then when he finally gives them the answer of, oh, I turn into a wolf, and then they're like, fine. You know, perhaps that would have made people happier about Jeffrey Dahmer if we had known he's not one of us, he's one of them. And so that that makes us sleep easier at night or something. But so, yeah, I think the short answer is the only way to really understand a werewolf is because they're werewolves.
Yeah.
Or we just made up stories about werewolves, one or the other. But I don't think modern medicine helps us that much.
Now, in our correspondence, you mentioned that there's a full moon that's coming up very close to Christmas. And that's also when this episode will be released, around that time. What is the werewolf connection to full moons? And what should we be looking out for during the next few days?
Oh, that's a good question. So the connection to full moons is, well, right now, the way even if you're infected or cursed as a werewolf, you don't actually turn into it like at lunch while you're at work, right? You have to wait till at night and the light from the full moon hits you. And that's just entirely an invention of movies, at Universal Studios in particular. They hadn't even developed that idea in the very first Wolf. Actually, well, the very first Universal was 1935 Werewolf of London, but that wasn't really popular. And it's kind of a dumb movie. But then Wolfman, 1941 with Lon Chaney Jr., like the famous Universal monster. Even then, it wasn't a full moon. It was just an autumn moon. And they didn't even show the full moon transforming him in that one. And so it wasn't until a later sequel, I think Werewolf or Frankenstein Meets Wolfman, that they changed like the little curse poem that the Welsh people go around saying and change it to full moon, because it just looks better on screen. Like, oh, there's the full moon. And now here comes the werewolf. You can try really hard to go back in, say, some ancient folklore stories or find some mention of moon and werewolf together, but it's really an invention of the silver screen. And so same thing with silver as well. But the what to look out for? Well, on Christmas, there is at least one werewolf in cinema history that it turns into a werewolf because... well, of cruelty that led up to his birth, of various human beings just being cruel to each other. But what really kicks it is he's born on Christmas Day. And so if you're born on Christmas Day, that's what turned him into, or that's what gave him the curse of the werewolf. And so that was a Hammer film, it was Curse of the Werewolf. And that's as far as I know. By the way, you can't find this on the internet anywhere. So if anybody's going to try to find out where was the first silver bullet to shoot a werewolf or to kill a werewolf, they're going to have to refer to your show to find this out. That it was 1961 Hammer Films, Curse of the Werewolf. That's where the adoptive father of this werewolf turns a silver crucifix that had been blessed by an archbishop, I think it was, into a bullet to shoot the werewolf, to kill him, because silver bullets don't show up anywhere else before that.
Wow.
And so that's a pretty recent thing too. So what to look out for is, well, I guess lock your doors, Keep an eye on your family members, and then keep an eye on yourself to see if you have any signs that you might be the werewolf that you're afraid of.
Really, really good tips. Is there anything that we haven't discussed that you think is important for us to know when trying to understand werewolves and the origins of werewolves, as well as their lasting legacy?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I've been trying to figure out, like, why is the werewolf the favorite monster of so many people by a large margin? And I think it's the perfect example of the kind of monster that we all get, because you have an animal side in you, Rebecca. Like, you have a vicious wolf in your heart somewhere. We all do.
Like a puppy.
For now, but you never know when that you it's in there, maybe, and maybe it's way, way in the back room. But we all have it. And so that thing can come out of you, that you can, like, see the outward embodiment of that inner animal inside of you. I think it makes so much sense to people. And that you can, like, a lot of our modern civilized notions of who we are, or being a good person, like, what if all that could get stripped away in one bad night? And that could happen to any of us, right? And so the idea of a werewolf is just that beautiful. And again, that didn't really start showing up until the movies. You know, the Wolfman 1941 was really ripping off Jekyll and Hyde. That was probably the origin of the story of someone, like, you're trying to be a good person, but then your worst side takes over because you haven't been properly, say, incorporating your dark side with your good side. And so it just takes over. And so, the werewolf stories, essentially through the movies, kind of combined all that. It's just one fantastic image. And so I would say, I don't know what that was, an answer or a lesson or but I guess that's just my painting of the picture of what makes the werewolf so appealing.
So we always ask our guest experts this question. At the end of the day, if you had to pick a person or thing, it could be a concept, that you think is to blame for the origins of werewolf folklore, who or what would that be?
That's a good question. I think my first instinct is to say werewolves are to blame.
Werewolves themselves.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you're going to have werewolves, maybe are the problem or the reason we have werewolves. So shame on them. But I would say, you know, and others could debate this with me, and I think there's room for debate. But as far as I can tell, like, that we look at werewolves or what a werewolf is with lenses that Universal Studios and Hammer Films gave us. Like, I think it's essentially a cinematic monster, and for all sorts of reasons, it looks really cool. You get transformation moments, right? And so we have this idea of what a werewolf is now. This thing that's like the darker animal side of a person turning into a beast. Like, we look with those lenses back at any instance of things that seem to match up to our modern, like, movie notion of a werewolf. So I would blame the movies or the werewolves, or perhaps the animalistic side of human nature. I don't know if I had to pick one, I guess I would go movies, but I don't know.
Wow.
Those are my three answers. Anyway.
We are going to have a lot to discuss after this, because we definitely took it in a different direction.
Oh, yeah. I'm really curious. And I'm really curious what alarms you. By the way, your podcast is a brilliant idea. It's a wonderful podcast. And all the way down to the name, like, The Alarmist. That's so good.
Oh, thank you, Josh.
Well, and I'm curious what alarms you about werewolves.
Well, I will say the direction the conversation went and what we ended up sending to the alarmist jail was social order. And we slapped the paranoia around unexplained medical conditions. I think we were assuming that werewolves perhaps are not real, but after this conversation, I might beg to differ.
Oh man, so I could totally see where you're going with that. Like, but social order is interesting. So is that like the, are you thinking like the repressive force of social order and then letting, that's what brings out the animal in us? Is that where you're going?
I was thinking, we were thinking it was more of our need to control the social order and thinking more of communities wanting to use these monsters in their fables and in order to kind of speak to the morality of the time.
Oh, yeah,
So.
that makes a lot of sense because I mean you didn't like when the in Europe, I mean essentially the werewolf is a European of a European monster, but during when the church was in was like when it was Christendom in Europe before the Protestant Reformation, you didn't have witch hunts, you didn't have witch burnings, like these were banned. You didn't have beliefs in werewolves. Well, you did, but you had to keep them hush hush, right? Because they were like rural folklore kinds of things or old pagan things. And so because we had the social order, we had the answer for everything, morally or otherwise. And then once that broke apart in about 1500, and then you've got essentially the Protestant Reformation, all the pagan stuff rises up, and then the witch hunt starts, and then the werewolf hunts start, and then all the stories rise to the surface. And so once that kind of social, that version of social order broke down, then we're going to bring in the monster version of social order. So you might be onto something with that.
Well, thank you so much, Josh, for speaking to us and for all of your incredible insight on this very scary monster.
Well, it's been my pleasure. And so as Christmas rolls around or the full moons roll around, just keep an eye out and keep those doors locked and keep some silver on hand. Best of luck to you.
If you'd like to hear our post-interview discussion and final verdict, head over to Patreon and subscribe. Your support is greatly appreciated. Check out our show notes for a link or head over to patreon.com/thealarmist. And stay tuned because next week we're going to be discussing the mysterious disappearance of Malaysian Airlines Flight 370. The Alarmist.
Powered by Acast.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.